For Tennessee, Tannehill looks for the home run ball. Separation! Khalif Raymond hauls it in! Touchdown, Titans!
Wow.
A deep one, 45 yards. Hand to Henry. Henry handles the contact, and there goes Derrick Henry. Henry has got major speed for a big man, and he takes it inside the 10. Direct snap. Henry, jump pass. Oh, trickery. Corey Davis, touchdown, Tennessee.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
The razzle dazzle for the Titans.
Yeah, what were we just talking about beneath the surface last week? What's up, Las Vegas? Welcome in on this Monday. We're just going to keep the Wu-Tang rolling. I like it, Magnum. Well done, sir. Tip of the cap to you. Our trusty producer on the ones and twos, Chris Chapman, bringing the woo to you here on this Monday. But, well, geez, Chris, what are we going to talk about today? I feel like, you know, we got an hour show. I'm so pressed with things to talk about between astronomically historical news coming down in Major League Baseball. Yeah, not great for the Houston Astros. Obviously, the NFL playoffs. If you missed this Antonio Brown news, which Magnum did, I just showed him before this the show started. We're going to get you up to date on that. And then about a half an hour, Wes Reynolds from VSiN is going to be stopping by because, oh, yeah, we got a national title we got to talk about coming up in a few hours.
Oh, there is. You know, it's been so long since there's been a meaningful college football game that I almost forgot.
I know. It feels good, right? Oh, and also, the Vegas Golden Knights are raising ticket prices for season ticket numbers.
On top of a three-game losing streak.
Right. Literally the worst time to announce an increase in ticket prices coming off of three of the more disappointing losses in Vegas Golden Knights history. I'm just going to be honest. They just kept compounding each other, right? But it's more so the way they looked, Magnum, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. But let's start with it. Let's start. Well, should I gloat? Yeah, I'm going to gloat a little bit. Kirk Cousins is still trash, everyone. I don't know if you saw that game on Saturday. You know what I mean? But I got a tweet, because Cofield likes to make everything public last week. It's time for you to admit that you're wrong about Kirk Cousins, Ryan McKinnell. I said it's one game, Steve. It's one game. Remember we talked about before the start of this season that Kirk Cousins was 5-27 against teams with a winning record? I'm looking more at that than one good win over the Saints. And it was a fine win, Kirk Cousins. But what happened? In the story of Kirk Cousins, one okay game. You like that? And that was the second time he got to say that.
Yeah.
He's been playing in the leagues.
I got one thing to say.
Yeah.
You like that? You like that?
It's starting to get annoying. And you know what? I don't even want to make Kirk Cousins my enemy. I've got really nothing against Kirk Cousins. In fact, when he was in Washington, I was a Kirk Cousins apologist. I was also an Antonio Brown apologist, so take that as you will. I'm a complete moron.
Yeah, I think you just lost all your credibility as far as it comes to apologists.
I know, right? Hey, it was a good run on the Mac Attack. We almost made it a year. Speaking of that, our year anniversary is coming up in I don't know.
You were so close.
I know. I almost made it. Speaking of almost making it, Adam Sandler not getting nominated for Uncut Gems and the Oscar noms today, earlier this morning. It's a quick side note to just everything we're going to be talking about today, but come on.
Does it qualify for this year's Oscars, or does it have to wait till next?
No, it qualified. It was in the Golden Globes. He was nominated in the Golden Globes. He just didn't get it for the Academy, which is ridiculous.
Well, the Academy Awards, I don't really get up in arms over it because, to be honest,
I get it. It's like the Grammys.
I
understand. But you know, like when you slap a tag on a DVD and you try to sell something, Academy Award nominated. Award. It's a big deal. Anyway, back to Kirk Cousins, who was not a big deal.
He's more like a what's the opposite of the Academy Awards? The Razzies.
The Razzies. Yeah. He's a Razzie Award winner.
Yes. Multi-time Razzie Award winner, Kirk Cousins.
And it was so bad. And listen, I know you are playing the 49ers, and my God, what a monster they looked like after 2 weeks of rest. And that crowd up there in Santa Clara, sorry, San Francisco, you know any in San Francisco, up there in Santa Clara. No, they looked outstanding.
What's bizarre, when I was up there for the playoffs last year, Golden Knights, San Jose Sharks,
okay,
I stayed not too far from there. And I drove by the stadium a bunch of times because traffic in that area is a nightmare. That stadium is in the middle of nowhere.
It's a joke.
And there's literally track homes. Yeah.
Now, I will say, Candlestick, I don't know if you had to go out to Candlestick.
I did.
Ever.
Okay. I was actually at the Garrison Hurst 98-yard touchdown run in overtime against the Jets game.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay, well, I will say this. So, you know, like, Candlestick was horrid.
It was a dump.
It was the worst place to park. It was an island, and when that game got out, you were in traffic for hours.
It was on, like, a peninsula.
Yeah, I will take that over to Santa Clara, because at least it had character, yes, and it was in San Francisco, and it fit the skyline.
And what I liked was that the stadium was so close to the bay that because of the way that the land it was built on, water would seep up into the field. So it was always kind of a wet field, which always made things a little more fun at Candlestick, except when they had the baseball diamond out there.
We got old producer Nick firing in. You know Nick from the Bay Area, former producer Nick. He listens, and he's saying Levi Stadium is not in the middle of nowhere, Chris. But I digress a little bit. We need to be fully disclosed. Nick is very much a Niners fan and very much a
He's a Bay Area guy,
but he's not a San Francisco guy. Anytime he can come to bat for San Jose or Santa Clara or the legitimacy of any place that isn't San Francisco, he will jump on
that. Spoiler alert, Nick is a San Jose Sharks fan.
Yes, he is.
So we don't like him.
That's right. Get out of here, Nick. No, I'm just kidding, buddy. We miss you.
Nick Nice is awesome.
Hope you're doing well, pal. But Kirk Cousins, he ends with a 21-29 stat line for 172 yards, and a lot of that was statted. It was padded at the end.
Yeah, it's like,
he had sub-100 yards for the majority of the game. At the end of the first half, I don't even know if they were in double digits. Like, you're talking 9 yards.
The worst thing is when people look at that and they're like, oh, well, look at his completion percentage. Yeah, he threw for 170 yards. I'm sorry, if a guy throws for 21 completions, he's...
And just like the Thielen bomb from the game prior, a lot of that came at the very end
on broken coverage. It was garbage time play.
And how about the one touchdown he got to Stephon Diggs? It was an underthrown 50-50 ball, but by the grace of God, it worked out. And he was able to get a touchdown. That stat line should have read, outside of fluke, gifts of God, delivered from the stork and Mother Nature, everything in between, right? He should be sitting at conservatively 120 yards, zero touchdowns and an interception.
Yeah. Bum numbers.
It was a terrible game by a supremely average quarterback. His stats back it up throughout his career. He has really no, and this is the thing with Kirk Cousins. Smart people are going to make excuses for him, which drives me nuts. Well, Dalvin Cook wasn't healthy. Well, Adam Thielen had stitches. Guys, this is the Minnesota Vikings. They are a well-constructed team. They have Harrison Smith on the defensive end of the ball. They have a good coach. They have a pretty solid defense. And they've got Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, and a line that is serviceable.
Well, this is and here's the thing. Viking fans, and we know there's a lot of them. There's a lot of Minnesota people here, but they have not won multiple games in the playoffs since 1987.
Wow. When you think about the people that have come through.
I mean, the teams that they had. Well, I mean, granted, the 15-1 year, they had a bye. But they won that first game in pretty easy fashion. Then they destroyed, or they beat the Arizona Cardinals, I think, in the playoffs that year. Then they lost
to
the Falcons.
And then they ran into the Falcons. Yeah, Dirty Birds.
Yeah, which the kicker misses one field goal as McKittle does Jamal Anderson. The kicker misses Gary Anderson misses one field goal all year, and it's that field goal. They were humiliated by the New York Giants, and I don't think anybody was beating the Baltimore Ravens that year. But you got to beat that Giants team with Kerry Collins at quarterback.
Yep, I'm with you. So, all right, I don't want to harp too much on Kirk Cousins. I do feel bad for Vikings fans. They're loyal. There are a lot of them here in Vegas. And listen,
they're all good people.
I don't know anyone
who's a jackass
who's
a Vikings fan.
No, I agree. And they're great fans. They're loyal. And
they're loud.
They're loud, absolutely. They travel well. And, you know, NFC North fans got to stick together. Unless it's the Packers. Then
they can go to hell.
The Packers can go to hell. What is the old saying, though, Magnum, right? The enemy of my enemy is my friend?
Yes.
It is us against the Packers, and I can't believe that Aaron Rodgers is still doing... I can, because, well, it's the Packers. They do this to the Bears all the time, and now they're doing it to the rest of the NFL. They had some rest. They looked like a very, very competent team last night. Even that said, with as good at different points as Aaron Rodgers and the Packers looked, Russell Wilson and the Seahawks inexplicably still found themselves in that game with the ability to win. And
I don't
bummer out there for anyone who had 4.5.
Yeah, well, if you had the Seahawks getting 4.5, if you have the Packers getting 4.5, you're happy. But I think, you know, we talk about Aaron Rodgers, but at the end of the day, it was the Packers defense.
It was.
And look, in that last drive that the Packers went on to run out the clock, Aaron Rodgers with that throw.
Dude.
But the funniest part was when they were talking to him after the game. He's like, I wish he would have stayed in bounds. Yeah, but he just threw it 45 yards down the
exactly.
field.
Exactly. So. Now, that's a guy I will defend. That's a guy, unlike Kirk Cousins, that I will come to when he has some bad game. Listen, he's going to back. And same thing with Tom Brady. They've earned equity. They've earned reasons for me to believe in them. Kirk Cousins is the complete opposite.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers looked at different points through not only this season, but last season, like a shell of himself at different points, well, right?
And I'm convinced, not to go back to Kirk Cousins, but yeah. I'm convinced that they would be better off with Matthew Stafford as their quarterback than Kirk Cousins.
Well, I don't think there's any question. They're very similar.
Maybe that's not a well.
No, they're similar. They get a lot of their numbers later in games when they're down and they got a pass.
In defense of Stafford, he has a buffoon as his coach.
And I agree. And I think Stafford is just a better quarterback.
Yes.
And I think the numbers would prove that. I think the leadership qualities, I think you look at late game comebacks, you think at all the different things that go into what you want in a leader and a quarterback. Matt Stafford's been saying you like that a lot more than Kirk Cousins.
And he
probably loses a lot more too.
Yeah.
If I haven't even actually looked at the numbers. But no, I mean... We'll see what the Vikings do, but the Packers, when you look at what they did last night to the Seahawks, when you go back to the team that beat the Vikings, you look at the way this is shaping up.
We got with the two best teams in the NFC.
That's what I'm saying. You look at the Niners and the Packers. Now, I like the Niners a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to have home field, and that definitely matters, especially when you look at the way Levi Stadium was rocking.
Yeah. Yeah, and it'll be rocking. First championship game in a couple of years they've had there.
Has to be.
What amazes me about the 49ers is the fact that they have got to be one of the few franchises that in the last 25 years has been at the very peak, been at the very bottom, risen back to the peak again, went down to the bottom, and within a couple of years they're back
they've
up.
They've done it a couple times.
Yeah. Because after Steve Young, they had Jeff Garcia, and then times got really dark after Mariucci
and then
Garcia.
Mike Singletary came in and
was awful.
Yep.
Then they had Kaepernick and Harbaugh, went to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
We're very close to winning that Super Bowl.
And then, even the Singletary years, not all of them were terrible.
No, they had some really bad years, though.
Oh, no, they did, but I think they had one or two good years.
Then they had, after Harbaugh and Kaepernick, they were down in the dumps again.
For what, like 3 years?
Yeah.
4 years?
And then they're right back at the pinnacle again. I mean, to me, that is the Rasputin of NFL organizations because they seem to have a million lives.
They your team to beat right now?
I do think they are. I mean, not that my opinion on them is really that great. I've watched a bit of them this year. I like watching them.
Yeah.
I like Jimmy G because he's kind of arrogant, and I like that.
You want that in a quarterback?
Yeah. And
as long as they deliver.
But the thing to
well,
me
maybe
that,
even when they don't.
But they have Richard Sherman, who's arrogant as well, on the other side of the ball. And to me, he makes a world of a difference. Like, what he brings to a defense, he brings swagger, but he also brings intelligence.
Yeah, I don't know which performance I was more impressed with this weekend. I really don't. When you look at what the Niners did to the Vikings, that was impressive. You look at what the Titans did to the Ravens.
Yeah.
I hope you weren't surprised out there listening. Plus 2,000 for a Titans Super Bowl win before that game is looking pretty juicy right now.
Wow.
Plus 2,000 on the Titans.
I'll be honest. I thought they were going to get smoked.
I didn't. I thought it was going to be closer-ish, but I definitely thought the Ravens were going to win. I'm not don't get that twisted. I thought the Ravens were going to win. And then you look at what Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs did. I don't know what more you can say. We will get to that in a second. But when you look at those three performances, and that's not to discredit the Packers, but that was a little bit closer, and I feel a little less confident about them potentially going forward. But let's start with the Titans and what they did to Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. First of all, let's talk about Lamar Jackson, because obviously I have been a big cheerleader for Lamar Jackson in the season that he had, and I don't really see how you cannot. 36 touchdowns, 37 touchdowns, breaks Mike Vick's rushing record. The best, most electrifying player in the NFL this season, bar none, no question. That is why Lamar Jackson is winning the NFL. Excuse me. That is why Lamar Jackson is winning the MVP. Right? All I saw yesterday after, or 2 days ago, after I saw that that beatdown,
lots of gloating.
Lots of gloating. Lots of, he isn't what we thought he was, told you, Bill Polian was right. saying he's not about the wide receiver, but some other things he had made about picking an MVP. Bill Polian didn't vote for Lamar Jackson for MVP.
Then he's an idiot.
He's telling on himself. That's a saying we like to throw around, right? You're telling on yourself.
Yeah.
There are some times when you say something so stupid and so illogical and so just false by any measurable metric that you're telling on yourself. Bill Polian totally just told on himself. But people were saying over the weekend, oh, Bill Polian was right. He's not an MVP, and MVP would have won that. Do you know that it has been since Kurt Warner in 1999 since the MVP won the Super Bowl? Okay, so we can end that conversation now.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson is your MVP.
Mm-hmm.
He had one of the greatest seasons in the history of the league, period. You may never see it again, those type of numbers. It was just a perfect storm. The Ravens were rolling. Big Trust was doing his thing. Ingram was laying it down. This was a team that was on fire until they weren't. And that is what's so great, if you're an NFL fan, about the NFL playoffs. And it's also what is so horrible about the NFL playoffs, if you're a fan, because you can think it's all in your corner. You can think everything is going in the right direction. You can think everything is lined up perfectly for you to attain a championship. And then you run into a team like the Tennessee Titans, which, if you've been paying attention these last 8-plus weeks, really the last 4-plus weeks, this is the best team in football, in my opinion, in terms of cohesion, in terms of execution, in terms of giving you exactly what you know they're going to do. The Tennessee Titans are probably the most predictable team left in the playoffs, yeah?
Yeah.
In terms of being able to eat.
You know what they're going
to
do.
Right. In terms of being able to flip around a game plan. Like, if things don't go well for the San Francisco 49ers, they have some options. They have George Kittle. They can hit you with Coleman. They can do things with the run. They can do things with the pass. Obviously, and Emmanuel Sanders, right?
Yes.
Same thing can be said about the Packers. Same thing can be said about the Chiefs. But you can't say that about the Titans. They don't have a particular, and that's not to discredit their receiving core. They have some talent there, or else they wouldn't be where they're at. They don't have game breakers. They don't have someone that you can count on to carry you through that. The guy that you are counting on in that huddle is one person, and it is Derrick Henry, and no one can stop him. And why is that? Well, it's January. It's week 18. He's 6'3", 200 and whatever pounds he is.
And he's unbelievably fast.
And you're tired. You have been playing since August in preseason. You've been in practicing. Your body is worn down. Hence why San Francisco looks so great with that rest. The last thing you want to do is get in a three-point stance, fire up off that bad boy, and look at Derrick Henry coming down at you. So to all the people that say, oh, it's not a rushing league and all quarterback contracts and everything revolves around the quarterback, yeah, there's some truth to that. But you can also take Ryan Tannehill, plug him in. If you got a weapon like Derrick Henry, and he can change your entire season.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is what this is all about. Because this team could not get the job done with Marcus Mariota.
Understatement.
Because
when you think about how, not to cut you off, but when you think about how polar opposite those two are.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
it is unbelievable.
I think the big difference is when you're Mike Vrabel and you give the ball to Marcus Mariota, you tell him to go out and win the game.
Right.
Right? Like, he is a top five draft pick. You ask him to go out and win the game for you. Ryan Tannehill, until the last, what, 5-6 weeks, was a monumental bust in the history of the NFL. Right? Like, a guy, he came in with all this hype. The Dolphins drafted him. He was going to be this great quarterback, converted wide receiver. He looked phenomenal at Texas A&M.
Yeah, but then he gave him to Joe Philbin.
And Adam Gase.
Who wants to play with Joe Philbin and Adam Gase separately, which is actually worse. I'd rather just have them both and then both get them out of town in the same breath.
But with Tannehill, you tell him, look, you don't lose the game for us. He only threw 14 passes. He was 7 for 14. And he wasn't even on the field for the biggest play of the game, which I thought was the trick play.
You don't need to be.
The jump pass.
You don't need to be. You just need to feed the rock to Derrick Henry and let him destroy you.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Tim Tebow play call, though.
Yeah.
Like, all right, go in, you're going to jump pass it, and we're going to put the game away.
It was beautiful.
And the run on that was set up by Derrick Henry to get them down inside the two.
Everything is set up by Derrick Henry.
They have the good combination of good defense.
Yep.
I think they meet their match this weekend, though.
We'll see.
I know they beat Kansas City earlier in the year, But I feel like Kansas City, they came out slow yesterday and they made a monumental statement.
That's selling it a little bit short, even by using the word monumental. But it speaks volumes to what we saw yesterday or didn't see for a lot of us. I'll be full disclosure. I was one of those people. It's 21-0 first quarter. I've got buddies in town. We're watching the game. Nobody wants to watch the game after that.
Yeah.
It's early in the day. It's like, well, what do we got?
I went to the movies.
Well, so did I. Now, the difference between you and I is I had the ability to pause my movie. I picked up Good Boys, that Seth Rogen movie about the rated R kids, which was outstanding, by the way. It's not the point. I didn't get to finish it, thankfully.
Mike didn't want to see that, by the way.
Yeah, no. Do not do that. No, do not do that.
I told him not yet.
Yeah, no. That could set him on a pathway. Your son right now is a math whiz.
Yes.
He seems like a very wholesome young boy. You go let him see Good Boys. I'll just say half the reason I ended up the way I did was because of Bart Simpson.
Yes.
I wanted to be like Bart Simpson. The last thing you want
is my son to be
like those kid.
Path.
Yes,
yeah.
To be like those kid in Good Boys. Now, I will say I watched about 40 minutes of Good Boys and I was like, oh, yeah, let me check in on that Chiefs game, see if they made it even remotely interesting. 28-24 Chiefs halftime, huh?
Yeah.
What in the hell did I miss? I got to pause the movie. I was enjoying the movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was my weekend. I had buddies in town. We had to do something. We're going to sit here and watch a blowout. Yeah. That's by all accounts. That's where that was heading until Superman himself went into the phone booth, did his Clark Kent thing, and then Pat Mahomes came out and absolutely eviscerated that second quarter. And listen, I know. Adam Hill tweeted it out. Well, it's so impressive. Like, he wasn't actually selling it short. He's just like, it's been so long. I haven't seen someone throw for 4 touchdowns in a quarter since Pat Mahomes did it in week 2 against the Oakland Raiders.
Oh.
Now, it's true.
Yes.
Pat Mahomes did.
Also the second quarter.
Huge difference. Number 1, regular season. Number 2, Oakland Raiders. Regular season, Oakland Raiders. To do this in the playoffs, in the situation that they did it, against Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans, who at that point were looking like world beaters. They were just cutting through the Chiefs. Now, granted, they had some turnovers and things made it the momentum the way it was. But what Pat Mahomes was able to do, Lamar Jackson is definitely the MVP. Don't get that twisted. It has been a joy to watch. But if I have one single player to start a franchise around right now in the NFL, there is zero question about who I'm taking.
Yeah.
It's Mitch Trubisky. Oh, I'm sorry. That was Ryan Pace in the Chicago Bears on Tuesday 2 years ago. 3 years ago. You understand my anger.
Yes. Yes, I do.
I'm trying to get right with it. I mean, 15 years ago, the Chicago Bears gave Brian Griese a contract when they could have paid Drew Brees like $1 million more and they could have had Drew Brees. There's this happens with every team. We could have had Aaron Rodgers. People pass on people, and it goes, but it's so hard watching a guy throw for 4 touchdowns in a single quarter and do it the way he does it, like throwing off the back foot with laser accuracy, just pinpointing into double coverage. Like, who does that? I mean, yes, he's got the note. He has signature moves.
Yeah.
That's for the NBA. That's not for NFL. You can't have signature moves in the NFL. You don't get a chance to have a signature move in the NFL. That's for White Chocolate. That's for Jason Williams. That's for Vince Carter. That's for guys who can make individuals look stupid like that and can shred teams. Can't do that in the NFL. Might get like a little sweetness high step or something. But for Deshaun Watson. But for Pat Mahomes to keep doing what he's doing and to look dead in the water like he did, I mean, to come back the way he did with the offensive output that he had, I get why you would say that you think the Titans are going down. Because Pat Mahomes, especially coming off the game, and it's not even recency bias. You can go back to last year. There's a track record of Pat Mahomes doing incredible things, truly incredible things. So all I can say is this, and we're going to get more into these games. I just wanted to hit them all a little bit because we only got an hour. We're going to get into these games as the week goes on, and we'll look ahead, and we'll have plenty to talk about. I should also mention we are definitely getting into the UFC. Conor McGregor is in town. Conor McGregor and Donald Cerrone going to war here in 5 days on Saturday at T-Mobile Arena. I'm going to be tied into fight week, so I'll have a lot of thoughts on that, and you'll hear plenty from that as well. But we have a lot to get to this week.
My favorite thing about the Kansas City Texans game was that buffoon, Scott Zolak, who is the color commentator on.
Is that how they do radio in Boston? Because if like.
Boston is the exception to the rule that you're not supposed to be a fan. Those people are so miserable that all their media are fans of the team.
It's really weird.
So Scott Zolak, who also does a show, I think he's on EEI. I'm not sure the station he's on. But he tweeted out, and it looks like maybe it's been deleted.
Oh, I'm sure it did. About the Kelsey tweet, right?
About Kelsey, where he basically, in the first quarter, tweeted out.
Where's Kelsey? You ain't no tight end. P word, something like that, right?
Yes, I'm hoping I can find it, but
it was akin to that.
Yes,
he called him the P word. He said, "You ain't a tight end. Where you at? You're a ghost, essentially."
Yeah, he it looks like he's deleted it.
Yeah,
looks
sure like he did. It's gone. Some clown. Yeah, I don't get that. I don't get why you would want to have your media members be fans.
Well,
I come from the East Coast, and like you said, that's just kind of a way of life there.
Yeah. Well, the funniest part of all of that was after he tweeted it. Travis Kelce had 3 touchdown receptions in the second quarter. Scott Zolak, in 55 career games, threw 8 touchdown passes. Who's not an NFL player?
He had half of your output in one quarter.
In one quarter, he caught 3 touchdown passes. You threw 8 in your entire career.
Well,
you ain't no tight end. Wrong, Scott. You ain't no quarterback.
Well, speaking of idiots, Antonio Brown, I've largely...
Ooh, I saw it.
Yeah, I've largely not spoken about Antonio Brown just because it's such a whirlwind and we spent so much of the summer, you know, going back and forth on this guy. You know, I wish him the best. I've supported him and defended him at different points, but that has been increasingly impossible over the last half a year, however you want to look at it. This latest video, and we don't have audio from it. You can go find it. It's all over social media. I'm sure it's up on TMZ. It came earlier this morning.
Oh, there's audio. We just can't play it.
There's no point. It would be like you wouldn't be able to hear anything. There's so many swear words. There's so many vulgarities. There's so much insanity. It seems to be a video where his baby mama shows up, the wife or the girlfriend with his kids. I don't know the full story. It's just the video that was put out. But the video is
now,
put
are these
out.
The this same isn't... kids that were in Hard Knocks?
I think so. But they show up there, and Antonio Brown is on his front porch screaming obscenities at his ex, at the police, and all while his children are around. And it is... blank you this, blank you that, you stupid blank, get the blank out of here, says I love you to his son, and then go with those blank, blank cops, you don't care about black people, you know, blank you, it is wild. I don't know the context. I mean, relationships they're different for everyone. You can never see behind closed doors. That's not even really what I focus on. It's that this dude is doing that with his children in front of him. He's yelling at the cops. He's just cussing. He's going nuts. He's going nuclear. He sounds scatterbrained. He sounds like he doesn't really have a point with why he's going into what he's going into. It's just a really sad situation.
And
you know what? Go ahead.
It seems like every time we talk about Antonio Brown, there's a new low.
Well, yeah. And this is it. And you know what?
No, I mean, the thing is, like, Trump, I don't think there is a rock bottom. Like, I really
First of all, Antonio Brown doesn't have Trump money.
No.
So he could go broke.
Yes.
And he looks, I mean, with the way he spends money and the things that we hear about with him and his problems, he's, after this, and I mean, I was saying this, there's a really, people think that he's going to play again. I don't.
No.
I don't
no,
think
I,
he is.
I don't think
and,
so
and
either.
Here's another thing. People are always talking about, you know, people were talking about mental health with him, a lot of people, and I always stayed away from that because I thought it was a cop-out with him, and I didn't think it was fair, but to people with actual mental health issues. But now the more I see of this, it's like, no, we could definitely be dealing with some, because it's just so insane.
Well, that's just it. The whole rant is nothing but, like...
It is.
Like, first of all, we don't know what led to this, but to react the way he did to just throw those words and look, I mean, there are people who have issues with police, but, you know, I mean, I have family members who are officers. I have family members who work for Metro. So, I mean, I respect the police. So for me, when I see this,
I think we all, even if you don't trust the police, and listen, it's different. We're not black. I'm going to say that right
yes.
away.
I cannot understand.
African Americans in this country have a different relationship police with than we do.
Yes.
But that even said, there is a baseline humanity and level of respect that I think everyone should get, even cops.
I respect someone who's willing to go to work and has the possibility that they may not come home from work.
Absolutely. Now, how far that extends, I think that depends on each individual situation. And again, we don't have the whole video, or I haven't seen the whole video of this, but it doesn't matter, mainly because of the kids.
Yes,
like, you have to put up some shield of who you are between yourself and your kids. You can't peel that back in that way, because that is going to influence them for generations to come, for years to come. And it's a bad situation with Antonio Brown.
It's just such a piss poor example for those kids.
That's what I mean. Yep, it's not
good. That's the worst part of all of it.
Well, you know who sets a great example for kids? We're going to head off to break. We're going to let you hear this, and we're going to let the one and only Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, tell you about what life is like in the NFL. Wants to give some advice to players coming up. Always been a great ambassador for the sport. Whether you love him or you hate him, you have to acknowledge that he is a man who cares about the teams he plays for, he cares about his teammates, and he cares about the game. He cares about the future of the game and the people coming after him. I know he's got the sound bites, "I'm only here so I don't get fined." Yeah, the guy was distrustful of media, which I think a lot of people out there, fake news, right? The media's the enemy. Which it's not.
Isn't it funny? The same people that attacked him for that stance.
Yeah, that are now doing that now.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. And that's kind of the point I'm making, right? Marshawn Lynch has been a man of the people. And if Antonio Brown is crazy, well, Marshawn Lynch might be a little crazy, but damn it, he seems like a great person. He lost, obviously, over the weekend. We may never see Marshawn Lynch play in the NFL again. But before he went out, he gave some words of wisdom to the future of the NFL. We're going to let Marshawn Lynch play us on out of here. Wes Reynolds from VSiN coming back, talking national title here on the Mac Attack.
Now, I done been on the other side of a retirement, and it's good when you get over there and you can do what you want to. So I tell y'all right now, while y'all in it, take care of y'all bread. So when y'all done, you go ahead and take care of yourself. So while y'all at it right now, take care of y'all bodies, you know what I mean? Don't take care of y'all chicken, you feel me? Don't take care of y'all mentals, because, look, we ain't lasting that long. You know, I had a couple of players that I played with that, you know what I mean, they no longer here no more. They no longer. So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken for when y'all, you know, ready to walk away. You walk away, and you be able to do what you want to do. But I appreciate it. Thank y'all.
I want to tune in and say all those people that doubted us and hated on us and thought we were going to lose this day.
The Mac Attack returns.
Yes, I did!
On 920 The Game.
That was Pat Mahomes' girlfriend going nuts. Throwing it in everyone's faces. I'm sure that was fun to sit by. You do your thing, lady. Your guy's out there doing his thing.
I laugh at four
touchdowns in a quarter.
I laugh at the anyone who doubted us. Well, first of all, you're not a member of the team, so they didn't doubt us. They doubted the team in the first quarter. I don't think anybody doubted Kansas City until it was 21-0.
Also, in fairness, everyone was doubting you because it was 21-0.
Yes, not because they didn't believe Kansas City was a good team. Now, I doubt them because I doubt Andy Reid in
a
big spot.
Fine. Well, speaking of doubts, the Academy is doubting our man, Sandman Adam Sandler, getting snubbed by the Academy Awards. I know Wes Reynolds is just as pissed off as I am about this. Wes, is there any justice in this world?
No, there's not in terms of the Academy. They always select their favorites. I know when Eddie Murphy got nominated for the Golden Globe, he didn't get it. The guy that played Elton John. That's the trick, I guess, to winning Golden Globes and Academy Awards. Play a musician.
Okay.
Jamie Foxx did it in Ray.
Rami Malek in Queen, or Bohemian Rhapsody. That's a good point.
Yes, absolutely. And I was listening to the conversation before with Pat Mahomes' girlfriend in that soundbite. I think she went to the Dabo Swinney school of playing the disrespect card. Nobody likes us. Nobody thinks we have a chance. But you know, Dabo's been doing that with his team all year at Clemson, and it kind of reminds me, and I know your buddy Adam Hill, and you also follow Seinfeld, and it reminds me of George Costanza saying, "Jerry, It's not a lie if you believe it. And Dabo's kids clearly believe it because they buy into this, we're disrespected and we're the uninvited guests of the party type of thing.
Yeah, well, if they're paying attention in Vegas, that's not exactly the case, Wes, because the line opened at -6 for LSU and the Westgate currently has it now -4.5. So clearly some people believe in the Clemson Tigers.
Yeah, and I do too. And it looks like that truck is getting pretty loaded up based on what I looked at in terms of what the folks that sell their place for purchase have been doing today. And look, we were having this debate, Brady Gannon and I, on the Green Zone of, is this line going to get to 7? And I just didn't think that it was, because I thought the Clemson money eventually is going to have to show up at some point. There is going to be buyback. And you saw a couple rogue sixes at 6.5 in the market, but it was by and large 6. And then all of a sudden I see 5.5 painted over the weekend. I'm like, okay, this isn't – we know that LSU is going to get support, but there's going to be plenty of Clemson support to cancel it out.
So I'll ask you this. What does Clemson need to do to cover and make these bettors happy, Wes?
I think obviously getting off to a good start is paramount. You don't want to get behind this team because this team can be a freight train. And look, they're going to mix it up. They're going to mix up the run and the pass. And you have a quarterback here that can run. What happened is when Oklahoma, and it ended up being a total mismatch, you take away Jalen Hurts' running ability when all of a sudden you get up on him 14 or 21 points, and then you can't use his legs. I don't know if Clemson is going to let LSU get that far away where you still have a Trevor Lawrence that can run. And I'm not really surprised that Clemson is seeing a fair share of the support from the betting community because, look, they were in the spot last year against Alabama. Same type of underdog around 6 points, and they won that game. You've got a Trevor Lawrence that is 25 and up as a starter. How many times do you get an underdog that's 25-0 as a starter?
That's great. And coming off a Heisman.
Yeah, exactly. So you get this guy, and plus with this Lawrence, he has not thrown an interception since, I believe, October 26th was the date when he last threw an interception. So 22-0 touchdown-to-interception ratio. And I do think coaching kind of matters here. And I'm wondering if this is kind of like last year's Super Bowl where you have Swinney and Trevor Lawrence in the Belichick and Brady role and then first time on the big stage in a long time, Orgeron and Burrow kind of in the Sean McVay, Jared Goff role. Because you've got a coach that has been here several times on this stage, and Ed Orgeron, this is new to him. Now, could LSU, look, they're a freight train on offense. They're a number one scoring offense. They're going against the number one scoring defense. Granted, they played against ACC competition, but this is new waters for this LSU team, and I don't think that should be underestimated.
Here with Wes Reynolds, host of the Green Zone over there on VSiN. You can also hear him on the Green Zone right here as a part of the Better Network on 920 The Game. All right, Wes, so we're talking about the monster that is LSU, and there's no question. They are a monster. They are a behemoth on the offensive side of the ball, and their defense is pretty good, too. But Joe Burrow, you mentioned it, Orgeron. These are new faces to this situation, right? And as well as Burrow has looked, and listen, Wes, I don't know if I've ever seen a better game by one player than what we saw from Joe in that semifinal game. So, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better performance to come off of, but I also feel like that's just, it's tailor-made for a letdown. How are you viewing that with Burrow specifically? Yeah.
Yeah, because when you look at it, before we had these two semifinal games, what was the line? Maybe LSU -1, close to a pick. Then all of a sudden Circus Sports puts out, okay, LSU -4. Against whoever the winner of the second game is going to be. People bet what they saw last. And look, they saw this Clemson team get down pretty sizable margin in the first half to Ohio State, but I think there's something said to be for getting a scare and getting a test and having to come back against a really good team,
yep,
which Clemson found a way and was able to do. So if they get into adversity, I don't think that they're going to panic because, look, they were in almost panic mode in that national semifinal out in the Fiesta Bowl And they didn't panic. They said, okay, we can get back in this. We can do this. Remain, you know, kind of the Kevin Bacon in Animal House, remain calm all as well. And they, but they did remain calm.
Yeah.
And they came back, and I think they have more than proven that they belong on this stage. Putting aside the Little Sisters of the Poor ACC conference that they played this year, I mean, it's not their fault that they've lapped the field multiple occasions. These other teams just aren't as good. So people will play that conference angle. I think it gets overplayed. You've got to look at these two teams as individual entities or organisms or whatever you want to quantify them as. And look, Clemson, the Alabama team they played last year, it's easy to be results-oriented and look at the fact that, oh, well, they crushed Alabama. This Alabama team clearly isn't as good as this LSU team. I think they're on pretty much the same level. I mean, when you really look at it, I think LSU's offense this year is better than the Tua offense from last year with Alabama. But I think Alabama's defense was a little bit, maybe a tad bit better than this LSU defense.
That's fair. So it sounds like to me, Wes, you're leaning, if you're going to take that five, it sounds like you're going to take that five in Clemson.
Well, I took six earlier in the week.
All right, so you're good.
I mean, I had, you, to, had to.
If
had
you're
to be
out there
that.
Listening and you're on the fence and it's a couple hours before game time, would you take the five?
Wouldn't lean that way. I would still lean that way. I mean, if you're going to take the underdog, too, you probably put a little bit, at least a small piece of it on the money line. It worked out for you in the spot last year. So I think if you're betting Clemson at that point, you're probably thinking that they've got a really good chance to win the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do. I like the orange and purple and white Tigers instead of the purple, yellow, and white Tigers.
Lots of Tigers in college football. All right, you like the total at all?
Lean to the under. It has been bet, though. It got up to 69.5, and then all of a sudden, nothing moved on the total for like a week and a half. It stayed the same. Then all of a sudden, you saw money come in, 67, 66. So I can kind of see that. I'm not going to get involved in the total, though.
All right. That is Wes Reynolds, host of the Green Zone, right here on the Better Network on 920 The Game. What you got coming up, Wes? What should people keep an eye out for?
Well, tonight we are going 5 hours from 5 to 10 Pacific.
Ooh, lucky
for
you.
The College Football Playoff Betcast. Jeff Pauls and the Market Watch crew lead us in, and we're going to be talking mainly about this game. This is a very low college basketball slate. We'll update the NHL and the NBA scores when we can, but it's pretty much wire to wire, pedal to the metal on the College Football Playoff National Championship tonight. So 5 to 10, right on VSiN.
All right, buddy. Well, you enjoy that, and you enjoy these games. All right, we'll catch up with you soon. Let's look at the next round of the playoffs in the NFL. We'll chat next week. Sound good?
Yeah, you got it, Ryan. Thanks, man.
Thank you, buddy. That is Wes Reynolds, as you heard, 5 to 10 tonight. A full slate of action. You can catch him over there on VSiN and on the Better Network here on 920 The Game. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Vegas Golden Knights have raised season ticket prices again. I'm telling you what, there's a lot of unhappy people out there. We'll talk about it.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, I said we were going to talk about the Knights. I'm going to save most of it for tomorrow. But, Golden Knights raised ticket prices for their season ticket members for the third consecutive year.
Take care of y'all chicken.
Whatever that means. Someone needs to take care of their chickens. I'll just say this. I don't know, man. You can't keep doing it every single year. I know there's a lot of people out there that think they want season tickets, or maybe they don't. Maybe they're content paying bargain prices on the secondary market and going to the games that they want to. That's what I would be doing. I'll just say this. The Vegas Golden Knights have raised my ticket prices to a ticket that I never get on the resale market. Never. It's about roughly around $140, $150.
They probably
bucks
do that
per
on
ticket.
Purpose.
Well, right.
They know what you're going to be able to resell those
right,
tickets
right, but
for.
But the point is four or five people I've talked to, they're contemplating quitting, giving up their tickets. I've already known two people that have given up their tickets. At some point, they're going to have trouble filling those seats because they're already some of the highest in the league. I already have, and I'm not the only one, have trouble reselling the tickets. You look at the amount of away fans that are coming into these games. Mm-hmm. It's something to keep an eye on.
Well, the other thing is they're not a Stanley Cup winning team.
No, they're not, and that's another thing. In a city where I know hockey's looking good right now, but again, there's a lot of people selling their tickets. There's a lot of away fans. If you look between the lines, and if you go to those games, It's not as rosy as some people might think. Speaking of rosy, this story, and we'll talk about it more tomorrow, this story involving the Houston Astros is wild. Punishments have been handed down over the trash bang or the trash can banging on the trash can video equipment in center field. That whole cheating scandal that also extends to the Red Sox and Alex Cora. It also goes to Alex Cora when he
who's also going to be that. Punished severely. Yes. Apparently,
well, the punishments have been handed down and they are severe. Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, took matters into his own hands after finding out that both his manager, AJ Hinch, and his GM, Jeff Lanau, were suspended for a year by Major League Baseball for their role in the cheating scandal. A.J. Hinch had essentially nothing to do with it. We found out in the course of this investigation that he actually broke the monitor twice as a message to the players. Also, the players were the organizers of all this, allegedly. Carlos Beltran was a huge reason why this happened. He was the one that was really pushing it.
Yay,
no
Mets.
Players,
yay,
yeah,
Mets.
Yeah, no players are being disciplined whatsoever. It's the parents, essentially. The parents are being disciplined, not the children, which is really odd to me considering we're talking about multi-million dollar athletes, and I think we would agree that the managers have less pull than the players. A star player has more pull over than a manager,
yeah,
in a lot of instances.
I think so. Yeah,
in a lot of instances. Mike Trout has more than anyone in the Angels, right? It's situational, okay? I understand that. But you would agree that that relationship is blurred. It is clouded. I talk about the suspensions being handed down by Major League Baseball to Lanau and Hinch. Yeah, it didn't really matter because Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, fired both of them after the suspensions were handed down. So neither one of them are going to be with the Astros going forward.
I'm not cool with that.
Well,
because Jim Crane, you should have taken the option to fire them before the suspensions came down.
Right. This
just looks like I got to do something. You know what? You knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Fire them before.
I agree.
Then you
now,
come out looking good.
Now, Lanau released a statement, and he absolutely flames just about everyone. He says, I accept responsibility for the rules violations that occurred on my watch as president of baseball operations and GM of the Astros. I apologize to the Astros organization, Astros fans, and the Houston community for the shame and embarrassment this has caused. I am deeply grateful to Jim Crane for an opportunity to lead baseball operations. I am not a cheater. Anybody who's worked closely with me during my 32-year career inside and outside of baseball can attest to my integrity. I did not know the rules were being broken. As the commissioner set out in a statement, I did not personally direct, oversee, or engage in any misconduct. The sign-stealing initiative was not planned or directed by baseball management. The trash can banging was driven and executed by players, and the video decoding of signs originated and was executed by lower-level employees working with a bench coach. I am deeply upset that I was uninformed, or I'm deeply upset that I wasn't informed of any misconduct, because I would have stopped it. I agree with Mr. Crane that our baseball operations team has achieved far more positives beyond this significant negative, blah, blah, yada, yada, yada. Point being, Lanau, I don't know if that's the truth, because I find it hard to believe that you didn't hear the banging on trash cans when you were on the road with this team, when you were watching the games at home, when you were around this team. I can't believe that.
Is there a franchise that has gone from being loved to hated quicker?
Nope.
Outside of the New England Patriots, I mean, you have the Roberto Osuna trade. Then you have the assistant GM.
With the locker room, now going the after locker the female room girl. Yep.
Now you have this.
Yep.
They are probably the most hated. They have probably surpassed the Yankees as the most hated. Yep. Maybe not.
No, well, that takes a lot of years, right? But you are on to something, right? This is a horrible turn of events for the Houston Astros. And Alex Cora, that man is dead meat. Because by all accounts, the punishments for Cora are going to be worse than what we've heard today. So lock it up, Red Sox fans. Your guy is about gone. We got plenty more. We're going to touch on more of this and tomorrow and the rest of the week. All right, we'll see you then. Enjoy the game tonight.